Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Aces Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Robert Maripol, and he is going to talk about the final days of the Trump presidency. So, Robert, we've had many discussions in the past. We have a few more days to go. What do you envision?
Well, first of all, these few more days feel like a few more years, you know, given how awful the situation is. Well, you know, there are lots of directions to take this. The thing that concerns me the most is really, well, first of all, there's the whole question of Georgia and the votes going on, and the fact that it does really look like it's going to be very, very close, whichever way it goes. And of course, that's pretty important for, you know, for the political circumstances. So in some ways, it's important in ways that haven't been discussed. For instance, if the Democrats do manage to take the Senate, then the heat is really going to be on Biden to accomplish something significant. And it will be, you know, the ball will be entirely in his court. And his failure to do the very significant changes that ordinary working people need in this country, if the Democrats control the Senate and they are still in the next 2 years unable to make any improvements of any great significance in the quality of life for the average working American, it's going to be entirely on his plate. That could lead, if he fails, as the Democrats have failed in the past, to the House turning over to the Republicans and to another Republican president. I mean, one of the things that's always bothered me the most about the Democrats is that their failure to do what they promised to do in terms of decreasing the gap between the rich and poor leads back to Republicans. And so the final days of Trump in that sense have very little to do with Trump. Now, of course, if the Republicans win in Georgia, then Biden has an excuse for all his failures, can blame the Senate. But for Trump himself, he's trying to position himself to make as much money as possible and to maintain as much power as possible. And that continues to be, you know, that plus the fact that he faces serious legal jeopardy, I think continues to be what motivates him. So if he feels that refusing to leave the White House is going to help him raise more money and give him more power within his constituency, that's what he's going to do. If he feels, well, that's not going to make much difference, he'll probably leave. But what the rumors say and what he says, of course, often have very little to do with reality. So we all have to take it with that old saying, take it with a grain of salt. Well, I think we have to take this with an entire salt lick because it's more than just a grain.
When he urged people to contribute to his PAC, he's made over the past, month and a half, made $200 million. That's going to go into his pocket. $200 million. I find that really, hard to comprehend.
Yeah, well, he's milking his constituency. You know, of the 74 million plus voters who voted for him, there's probably a majority of them are not crazy Trumpers who are not contributing. But even if a minority, even if, you know, if there's 10 million people who are contributing to him, you know, if they each give $20 on average, that's $200 million right there. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if that number between now and the inauguration goes up by another $100 million. And of course, money is what drives him. And evidently, yeah, he's in deep financial shape. So that's part of it. You know, but I also, I want to express my concern more with Biden, that, you know, we did see in Biden attacking Trump and the Republicans who filed this seditious lawsuit, attempting to under, you know, to disenfranchise 20 million Americans. And, you know, essentially their continuing ongoing effort to stage a coup in a incompetent manner. And we're very lucky that they're as incompetent as they are, and that Trump shot himself in the foot by, attacking the military and attacking the FBI and the CIA. So they're more supportive of Biden than they are of Trump. So that lawsuit, you know, Biden attacked them for that, but he still continues to really focus on unity and we have to heal and shared values. And a lot of the talking heads who support Biden are saying the exact same thing. And of course, the question is, when someone says to them, well, what if the people who you say you're going to reach out to refuse your offer of a handshake? What if, in fact, they take out a big sword and they cut off your hand? What are you going to do? And none of them have any answer for that. So what we see is a potential repeat of 2008, though, you know, we know where 2008 left us, which was, you know, it was a phenomenal failure. Obama was able to accomplish nothing, and that led to a massive electoral defeat for the Democratic Party 2 years later. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Biden seems to be going in the same direction, and he'll have his excuse again, as I said, if the Republicans retain control of the Senate. You know, the alternative is to take more progressive action. The alternative is to counterattack. And the first thing I think the Democrats should do, particularly in the House of Representatives, where they have the majority, is that there's a post-Civil War Reconstruction law on the books that people who show that they're not loyal country cannot be seated in Congress. And those 126 or 129, I forget the exact number of Republican representatives who signed on to that lawsuit, they have demonstrated that they're traitors to the Constitution, that they don't believe in voting, that they don't believe in that we are a democratic republic. They believe in authoritarianism and power. And as such, they're a threat to the republic. And Pelosi should refuse to seat them. And she's got legal grounds for doing it. And of course, the Republicans will sue. And of course, the Supreme Court will come up with some reason why the law doesn't apply, because they're primarily Republicans. And then Pelosi has the choice of saying, well, that's what you say, Supreme Court. I run this chamber, and this is what I say. And, you know, Biden can do similar things if he wants to. And follow the course of the progressive Democrats. And people say, well, you know, the progressive Democrats, that's a good ticket to lose out to the Republicans, and mm-hmm. because they're too radical. Well, you know, that's possibly correct. I mean, I was a big Bernie supporter during the primary season, and looking back over the presidential election, I have to admit that it is certainly possible that if Bernie had been running against Trump, that Trump would have won. That if I look at why Biden won, he won because people of color in large cities came out in droves and voted for him. I don't know that Bernie would have been able to motivate them to do that, given. And with that, that difference could have been the difference between victory and defeat. So I acknowledge that going the progressive, aggressive route is perilous and could backfire. However, going the other route has been tried and failed. So we know that doesn't work. It seems to me wiser to go in the direction of something that might work or might fail, rather than go in the direction of something that we know will fail.
This is how I see it. I think that the Republicans are not going to pay much attention to Biden. They're going to obstruct, like they did with Obama. And the progressive Democrats are going to be at war with the moderates. So it looks like a pretty rocky situation as far as I'm concerned. You know, Biden is not young, you know, and does he have the stamina to withstand all this? And in case of something catastrophic, what would be the reaction for Vice President-elect Harris to assume the presidency? So I see trouble all the way down the line.
Yeah, I do. I see quite a bit of trouble. It is, you know, it's like I voted for Biden mostly because I was voting against Trump. Okay, not even mostly, because I was voting against Trump. And not really for Biden. And defeating Trump, I mean, it was euphoric. I mean, we in my neighborhood here on that Saturday, I guess it was like November 7th or something. It was in the 70s. It was a freakishly warm day. And there was a spontaneous, you know, block party. Now people were wearing masks, but somebody brought a sound system out and people were playing music like Ding Dong,
wow,
the Witch is Dead and Goodbye. And, you know, and it was, and that happened all over the country. This euphoric feeling that we had gotten rid of this evil menace. But now as time has gone on, you know, a combination of the virus going wild and how terrible the situation is for tens of millions of people in the country, and not to mention, you know, billions all over the world. That euphoria passed, and it's been replaced by a realization that what we face with the Biden administration and the Republican obstructionists and corporate Democrats remaining in the dominant position in the party is not a pretty picture. If you want to, the most optimistic thing you can say is that come January 20th, I think we're going to have a science-driven, more equitable, I don't want to say equitable, more equitable response to the pandemic. And we have a good shot of during the year of, you know, coming out of 2021 with much, you know, approaching normalcy, pre-COVID normalcy, if not there already. And that will be a tremendous boost. That could very well lead to a short-term economic upswing, because there's a lot of people who've been hunkered down and not buying as much, and our economy is driven by consumerism. And so there may be a burst of consumerism, particularly from the top 20% of the nation, which has benefited quite well, done quite well in COVID, in the COVID era, as opposed to the bottom 80%. And that in itself could end up really boosting the Democrats' chances in 2 years, despite everything we've said. But who knows? That's who knows if that's going to be the case. But I do want to say that dealing with the virus is, of course, you know, problem number one. And I think at least we have a better chance of dealing with that. I want to say better, but, you know, there are flies in the ointment, because there's still all these Republican governors who can make it more difficult to actually correct the virus in their states. And there are all these prejudices, like, you know, we need to vaccinate lots of people, and that probably includes millions of undocumented people. And, you know, is that going to happen? Well, who knows? So, yes, there you can point to a few rays of sunlight, but even those are maybe problematic.
From what you're hearing and what you're experiencing, are you inclined to get the vaccine?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I figure because I'm over 70 years old and I do have an underlying condition, I probably will be, you know, after the healthcare people and the nursing home people and the essential workers, I'll probably be in the next cohort. And, you know, I don't know when that will be. I mean, there are some people who say it could be as soon as February, but that's all based on the Trump plan. And one of the things we know about every one of Trump plans is that they're full of lies and they're full of exaggerations. So, you know, I don't know exactly when it'll be. It may be April or May, not February. But yes, I will take the vaccine. I am, and you know, how do I feel? I mean, by then, millions of people will have already had it. And I think we will know if there's a real problem with it, at least an immediate problem. So I'm pretty confident. I mean, I think Dr. Fauci is someone, you know, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or whether you're a radical or a liberal, I think he is someone who's, you know, who can be trusted. And so, if he's saying it's safe, I think it's safe.
Okay.
So, what about you, Cynthia? Are you going to take it?
I'm on the fence.
Uh-huh.
I'm on the fence. I'm kind of leaning towards it, but I got to see the statistics before I say yes. You know? These are pretty scary times, and I think something like that, even though it might seem trivial, I think it's pretty profound. So I'll say.
I think, you know, the fact that less, you know, 9 months after this virus that really becoming known to the world, that there are all these vaccines, that the amount of the cooperation between government and big business and the amount of money that was thrown at it and the progress that was made actually is an important object lesson. Because if we put the same amount of energy and money into and coordination into correcting our public school system or into fixing our healthcare system or into eliminating hunger or homelessness, there's no doubt in my mind that we could do that, and we could do it really quickly. That if that was the direction that the powers that be wanted to take us. But the powers that be would much rather have 80 million, would much rather have 800 military bases all over the world. They
right.
much rather have our troops in over 100 countries. They'd much
mm-hmm.
rather have, you know, the military providing protection for the extractionist corporations. They'd much rather make sure that billionaires benefit. So those priorities are all, you know, 180 degrees screwed, skewed in the wrong direction. And so it shows we see what we could do. And I just hope that that a lot of people make a lot of noise about that. But unfortunately, you know, in terms of the general public, aside from a few small voices on the relatively far left, it's only the progressive caucus of the Democratic Party that is making the pointing this out, and it's just not getting much airplay. So trying to get the public to see this and to agitate for it in much greater numbers is difficult. I read just recently, just this morning, that there was a battle for a committee position between AOC and another congresswoman, and I think it was the Commerce Committee, and they both wanted to be on it, and so they ended up with a secret ballot, and that ballot, I read the report, so evidently it wasn't that secret. Well, who voted for whom was secret, but the numbers weren't secret. It came out something like 48-13. So against AOC. So the corporate Democrat
wow.
got the position. And so that shows, even though, you know, it's great that AOC got 13 votes, because probably she would have gotten 4 or 5 2 years ago. But it's still a minority position within the Democratic Party, and it's not, you know, and even though I think in general the public is behind them, the way our system is set up, what the majority of the public believes has relatively little impact on who actually gets elected.
Right.
And that's a real problem.
Do you think that AOC has a future in the Democratic Party, and can she make inroads? I'm glad
I think she can. I think she can. I think there have been inroads made this year, but it's, you know, where are the inroads? The inroads are in the big cities with more people of color in the district. And the whole way the system is set up is through gerrymandering and through the undemocratic nature of the U.S. Senate, where there are two senators from Wyoming with its, you know, 500,000 people, and there's two senators from California with its 50 million people. And that enables the more conservative, rural, white, you know, colonial settler, ideological, racist base to have real power, much more power than they deserve, according to their numbers. So I think that we will see an increase of support for AOC and for AOC-type people. But whether that – and it might even get to the point where a majority of voters – support positions, but I don't see them being able to take control of the Democratic Party anytime soon. And certainly the Republican Party is, who knows where it's going. I mean, you know, I wonder if this whole Trumpian situation is going to lead to the unraveling of the Republican Party, the creation of a more centrist, Republicat party, and the creation of a left wing party. I don't know. That's hard to see. But mm-hmm. I think for the next 2 years, nothing basic is going to change.
Right. And but there will be actions to ensure that what you're saying might happen. I think the Republicans might be due for a realignment. I think the Democrats might be due for a realignment. So I think the next few years are going to be interesting. I don't think they'll be tranquil. And I think we're in for a rocky ride.
Yeah, I think we're in for a rocky ride. And, you know, the thing that we, the one of the, and I'd like to, I wanted to say the 800-pound gorilla in the room that nobody's mentioning. Well, the reality, unfortunately, is there are several 800-pound gorillas that in the room. But one of them mm-hmm. is it's all going to take place in the context of more and more climate-related problems. One of the things mm-hmm. that we have been unable to do as a species, it seems to me, is extrapolate. We keep seeing the climate disasters that are occurring as if they're static, yeah. as if, okay, this is what's happening now, so we've got to be able to deal with it. What mm-hmm. we don't see is what is going to happen next year is going to be worse than what's happening now. And the year after that, it's going to be worse because of the way the atmospherics work, the way it, how long it takes for the full impact of the pollution and the CO2 that we've and other greenhouse gases that we put into the air, the up to 30-year lag time before we see the full effects of what we've done in the past. We don't account for that, or too many people don't account for that. And so we don't realize that we are going to face bigger and bigger disasters, and those disasters are going to lead to more and more human displacement. And that in itself will spark racism and nationalism and conflicts. And so we haven't even been talking about all of that. That's a layer on top of everything we face.
That cheery note, we've got to close because our time is up. So I look forward to talking with you in the new year and the new administration. You've been listening to Robert Maripol. This is Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thank you. Thank you. Happy belated Hanukkah.
Yes. Well, happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you.
And thank you, Cynthia. Bye-bye.